sailing home, slow hair.
This is Bird's Eye View, your sailing podcast. Live, Sail, Die have put together what we hope is going to be the most informative and entertaining sailing podcast you've ever heard. I'm Darcy Watergrave. I'm hosting and trying to keep these two roustabouts calmed down. Joey Ellen, Barbara Kendall, two of the biggest names in New Zealand sailing. We'll be broadcasting from the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron's Crow's Nest, one of the iconic rooms in New Zealand sailing. Lock yourself in. This is going to be fun.
All right, let's get into it. Here we go. Doors being shut. We are now locked in to the Crow's Nest. 3, 2, 1. Welcome on into the Bird's Eye View podcast. I'm Darcy Waldegrave, and I'm joined, of course, as per usual, by Live, Sail, Die's favourites, Jibe Mark Joey Ellen. Hello there, sir.
Hello, hello.
You even cracked a smile there, mate. Are you okay?
I've just had my teeth put back in.
Okay. Barbara Kendall, don't make jokes about the teeth. Hi, welcome
Kiwi
on in.
Fruit, Kiwi Fruit, did you play that drinking game where you weren't allowed to show your teeth when you smiled? Kiwi Fruit.
Never played any drinking games.
This place gets weirder and weirder, I swear, up in the Crow's Nest with the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron. And thanks very much, of course, to Andu. Feel good, and we love their support here in the podcast. Right, who have we got lurking here next to us? His name is Leo Takahashi, or Len, or Leonard, or I'm not entirely sure. You can call everything up here at the moment. I'm going to run with Leo. Leo, welcome on in. Great to have you on board.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a wee bit about who you are, just right off the bat. You're standing on stage and you're going, right, I'm Leo. Not I'm Leo and I'm an alcoholic, but I'm Leo and I'm a sailor. So tell us what you do. I know what you do, but the people out there might not.
Yeah, Leo Takahashi, as you said. Well, dad's name's Fry, but got my mum's name. I grew up in Japan and then moved to New Zealand when I was 8. And that's when I kind of picked up sailing and then, yeah, kind of progressed through the ranks here. And here I am now, yeah.
So I'm going to go straight to it. I've pre-warned you about this. Yes, how did your mum and dad meet, and how come you took your mum's name?
Good question. Yeah, I think I only recently found this out probably a couple of years ago. But mum and dad met in Japan. Dad was sailing in the Nippon Challenge.
Okay, so your dad was a sailor.
Yeah,
okay.
Dad's a sailor. Mum's not a sailor. And they met in Japan. Dad lived there for 32 years or something. He moved there when he was 18. So
why did he move to Japan when he was 18?
I don't know. Must have had a...
What, you never asked him?
You need to find out about your father. Was he a school teacher? He wasn't teaching English or anything?
No. He got a job over there working on a boat and a marina over there. So, he was a keen sailor here and then kind of moved over and I guess he liked it. So, there you go. They met over there and then moved back here when it all suited.
Yeah, and then how come you took your mum's name, not your father's name? I love that.
I don't know, actually. I'm not quite sure. I think it's just
it's
the way,
a cool
it,
name
just the way,
to
it, just the way it played out when I was born.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
Your dad. I met your dad.
Here we go.
In Japan.
Yeah.
With the very, very beginnings of the Nippon Challenge. Mm. And he was a big part of getting that America's Cup team off the ground. And very, 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 important guy in the beginnings, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and we used to go up, a group of us used to go up there and help coach them, and it was scary because there was windy, cold, miserable, and they were very inexperienced. And sailing, they had 12 metres?
12 metres, yeah.
Yeah, and we used to bash the hell out of them in 12 metres. It was terrifying. And they got to a very, very high level very quickly through to guys like his dad.
Wow.
Yeah,
one tonners and 12 metres, pretty popular Admirals, back then.
Oh, we did Admiral's Cup
Admiral's
with
Cup,
your dad?
Yeah, a one tonne cup, I think. Or yep. Quarter tonners, maybe?
No, it was Admiral's Cup.
Yeah, right.
And we were involved in a team going to Japan and smashed them into shape. And they were amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very cool.
So what club did you grow up with when you came back here and you were 8 years old? Where did you start?
So I started Waterwise at Murray's Bay. And then, yeah, grew up.
But nothing in Japan, sorry to...
Nothing in Japan, no.
Nothing in Japan at all.
No sailing in Japan.
Even though the old man was right into it, nothing at all. No, forced you into it.
By then he was kind of working in Tokyo, export, import. So, not much sailing happening there, and then moved here. And then, saw the water probably... Yeah, and just straight into Waterwise.
Well, it's in your blood, isn't it, plainly?
Yeah, so I think so.
Now, carry on. Sorry, Barbara.
No.
Yeah, straight into Murray's Bay, and then, I think that's when... I kind of realized that sailing could take me somewhere competitively, and that's when, yeah, it can kind of just...
So you started in the Optimist?
Yeah, Optimist.
And what age did you... So you started when you were 8 or was it 9 by the time
Yeah, it was 8 and then Optimist all the way through to 13, 14
Can you remember
something.
When you first jumped into Optimist, was it natural for you or did you go, I don't even know how to turn this
thing? No, I had no idea. I didn't even have any much English-speaking ability either, because I went to an international school in Japan for a little bit, but, I mean, yeah, it wasn't, you know, great in terms of English. So I then got here and then I had to learn English at school and then straight into sailing jargon. And
wow.
Then it was pretty cool, but had some really good coaches there, like Dan Wilcox, and some of the junior coaches there were really good. So that's when it kind of
talk
got
about
excited there.
How far you got in the Opties? I think you've been, you know,
well, we haven't got there. We just what was it like when you first
he
jumped
went bloody
into
well.
I know. You can tell. It's got that little glint in his
did
eye.
Did that help you assimilate though with New Zealand culture and being here in New Zealand, coming away from Japan because you didn't speak the language? That's quite a shock to the system, I expect. Although 8-year-olds are probably a little more buoyant, excuse the pun, than your average. But did that help you build into being over here finally?
I think so. Yeah, it kind of more suited myself. You know, walking and running around barefoot and the sun, and it was a lot nicer living here. Just having more space as well was nicer, I think, compared to living in Japan. And we had a house over there, but we were in an apartment for a while, and, you know, I think just more roads and cars and stuff there. It was just a bit hectic for me, but that's what I kind of remember. The lifestyle change was quite significant for sure.
And so when you jumped in the Optimist, how long before you went, I like this, I know I've got a natural talent in this?
I was actually quite into basketball when I was younger, before the sailing. So I did basketball all the way through to high school. And then, yeah, I was always competitive in sports. So then I think it was the 2008 Beijing Olympics. That's when I watched all the rowing and the sailing on TV. And that's when I kind of realized that this is something, as a competitive person, that I can take to the next level. Didn't know what sport I was going to do that in, but wanted to, you know, definitely go to the Olympics for sure. So then from then on, you know, we kind of, Dad, with a little nudge here and there, kind of really after school and all that, kind of just nudged me in the right direction. And obviously Mum was angry at me, Dad, for taking time off school and all that, but we made it work. And
And so were you, what age was it when you went, right, I want to compete in that? When did you start your first nationals? How long was it when you
think,
first got into it?
Yeah.
You went through the fleets?
Probably, 9 or 10 and did the Green Fleet, Wellington. Bit of a shock. it was the first, Dad was working overseas now, so it was just Mum and I mishing it down to Wellington. It was really cool. And then just being part of the Murray's Bay atmosphere, that everyone kind of took me in. Having no dad there, so it was quite cool. And then from then on, open fleet, chipping away at the ranks, and then got a really good training squad with Isaac McCarty and Marcus Somerville, Tim Adair, and we were coached by Chris Steele. And then from then on, we 1-2-3'd at the Nationals in 2011 and 2012, and then we kind of took the kind of Opti training group to the next level from there on. And we got some really good, solid results at the Worlds. So you
clicked into it really, really quick, only after sailing for a short amount of time and then accelerated through the ranks.
Yeah. I think we just had a really good training group and just
pushed each other.
Yeah.
So that was critical mass that we keep talking about is having that critical mass of really good sailors, a really good coach that understands, and just guiding them through. And then you set the benchmark.
Were you the first group to do that, get that group thing working for you? Do you think, like I saw afterwards, there were little groups formed. They called them, had little names for them.
I think, there was always little training groups here in the past, but it was club-based, and we were all from different parts of, we live out in Derry Flat, and Isaac was from Hamilton, and then Marcus was in Narrow Neck at this stage, so we all kind of just came together and didn't really train with a club or anything, but we figured that training together would kind of accelerate the best. So then it just worked for us, and I think the training mindset of a group is really important, and we kind of shared everything. And I guess it was an early kind of beginning of, you know, the Olympic kind of mindset as well, the real high intensity little block trainings. we didn't really train much after school, but if we did, it would be really short and intense and make sure that we're not kind of distracted from other things. So
what was after the Opti?
After the Opti, I kind of flirted in the Opti were doing P class and styling at the same time. But I think back in the day, Opti's weight was kind of pushed further up, so we're selling Opti's to 50 kilos.
Oh, wow.
And so I did my last Worlds in Garda at 58 kilos or something. Too big probably, but that's what the kind of fleet was still able to do. Wow. And then, at the same time, we started flirting in the 29er, and Isaac and Marcus had already moved on. So that's when I kind of, I think looking back on my career now, it's when I kind of had a little bit of a slip up, as I didn't leave the Opti fast enough and use my bigger weight to get into a youth class as quick. So then I had a big growth spurt and only had about 2 years in the 29er, where I actually helmed for 6 months and crewed for a year and a half. Just
who were your mentors at that time?
Sorry. mentors. I had a couple people. Chris Steele was always there kind of guiding me. And then just throughout the youth stuff, was never really present in the youth stuff. Never really got any notable results, just with how changeable I was in the boat and my weight just not being right for the class. So then went straight into the yacht squadron. So
yeah, right.
And the youth training program.
So that's a really interesting transition when you think about it, because lads grow so much and they're sort of 16, 17, 18 and they become like puppies that don't know where to put their arms and legs and, you know, like they're all unco. And
baby
and
giraffes.
And their brains aren't really attached and it's just really hard to know what to do, and then you're too big and then you're too small and,
But, that's why it's a little bit different now with all the Opti kids kind of, you know, getting out of the class at 13, 14 now, and they have a decent stint at the youth classes. So it's a little bit nicer for them, because then they get to – if you're smaller, you get to have a crew that's already been, you know, steering for a little bit, and then you get a nice partnership there, and then it's a nice progression. So,
can we talk a little bit about the youth program?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, obviously, is it three years?
It's 3 years, yeah. I did 3 years, and then the performance program was just starting up, so then I joined the NACRA 20 falling program there. So that was really cool. I think Guy Pilkington kind of recruited me there into a first year kind of helming role. So I was in there at 16, I think, and then sailing every weekend for 3 years, and then still doing some 49er sailing.
And who was in that group with you?
There was still about 40 kids there that were all over the age of 18 probably, so I was probably the youngest there. And it's crazy how different it is now here. It's a lot of younger kids and probably less people. But there's lots of, you know, older guys that don't sail anymore. But you know, Connor Mashlin, he was there. He was one of the older kids. George Anion, George Brazel, all those guys were really good match racers.
Yeah.
Where it was still popping off. Really good crew. And I was about 2-3 years younger than kind of everyone in the program. So it was a really cool environment for me to be part in. Lots of fun on the weekends, and then kind of being taught what the real kind of sailing was like. Real intense sailing. And then real intense training, match racing Saturday, Sunday, which was a whole new kind of skill that you would never really learn unless you got into the program.
That's true.
You do a bit of teams racing here and there at high school, but match racing, it's quite hard to get into.
So lots of mouth shut, but eyes and ears very wide open with that experience that you're...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
then
that
what?
That was really cool.
After that?
Then I started in the 49er. So during the 29ers, didn't really have a really solid partnership that I could kind of take to the next level. And like I said before, I didn't really have any notable results in the 29er, and wasn't really part of the Yacht in New Zealand kind of system. The Aeon startup kind of wasn't really, didn't really qualify for any of those things. So I was kind of scratching my head a little bit. And
was that discouraging for you? Did you think about what you were doing?
Well, I think yes and no, but I didn't really have an option then. So then I kind of branched out to see if, I still wanted to go to the Olympics at this stage, and I was sailing every Saturday, Sunday at the squadron. So from then on, I wanted to kind of branch out, and I know a couple of people in Japan that were starting up a new like Olympic, the same thing as Aeon Startup in Japan. So then I kind of branched out to them, and they said that if we start an Olympic campaign from now, it's kind of like the start of a grassroots Olympic skiff. They didn't have many good skiff sailors in Japan at the time. So, yeah, I guess it was – I was just the start of the part of that with my training sailing partner, Ibu, who also at this stage moved to New Zealand to join the youth squadron, the yacht squadron. So then we were doing Saturday, Sundays of the yacht squadron and 5 days a week in the 49er at Milford Beach. So lots of sailing from the years of 17 to 21.
Did you go
21.
To school?
Yeah, I did.
Just as a question.
I went to high school, yeah. Yeah? Yeah, yeah.
Which high school did you go?
I went to Kristen.
Okay.
Yeah, so did the teams racing out of there.
Right, perfect.
Yeah, really good school that kind of really helped.
Yeah, they support student athletes.
In terms of, yeah, student athletes.
It's quite a big thing, you know, just...
Nationality-wise, what flag would you sail under the Olympic?
At this point, I was sailing for Japan now,
yeah.
In the 49er, yeah.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That's when I, in the junior classes, it was representing New Zealand in the Opti. But then until you're 18, you can kind of, you don't have to really have to commit to a national. And then, yeah, from 16, I started sailing. Japan, yeah.
Were you training with the Kiwi boys, obviously?
Yes, I have a really good relationship with those guys, yeah. And throughout, yeah, from 2016 probably to 2021, I trained with all the boys.
Yeah.
It was really good training squad out of Milford and Akarana. Really good regattas, in-house regattas here, and then, yeah.
Open. You had a good fleet back then, you know, when Blair and Pete were still 49ing. What was the largest number you had at a nationals in that period of time?
Probably only still had six, but
okay.
Really
high quality,
yeah.
Top guys.
Yeah.
And then...
Josh Perebski was...
Yeah, Josh and Trent.
Yeah.
Logan and Oscar, or Logan and Jack as well, and Oscar, and then... Isaac and Willie were starting out, and then we had Sam Bacon and those young guys coming up. So, really, and then Pete and Blair would show up here and there. So, really good group, and it's probably one of the really good times of just sailing at home. Really, yeah.
This is the Bird's Eye View podcast, courtesy of Live Sail Die, Darcy, and Jibe Mark, and Barbara. And Leo, Len, the list goes on, joining us here. Thanks very much to Andu for climbing on board with us, and, of course, the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron as well, for allowing Live Sail Die to up here and lurk in their crow's nest, which is quite the privilege. Shall we turn the clock forward a wee bit further?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Tell us about America's Cup.
the Youth America's Cup. It was a huge honour. It was a really cool... really cool project because
how did it come
a year before? Yeah, so in 2023 now, early they announced the AC40 and Team New Zealand was starting out their two boat program, and I was asked by Shub to join, and I guess the whole point was for me to get some experience in the boat and then also to help with the two boat testing. So I guess having a bit of a match race background, and then by that time I was doing a little bit of SailGP sailing, so. There was enough experience for me to jump on, and I trained a lot with Josh Jr. and Sam Meach, Marcus Hansen, and Liv at this point came in as well. We're both backup skippers on port, training up against the Pete Blair, Andy, and Nath. So, yeah, had some really good sessions in the back paddock against them, and then from then on, the ball started rolling. The guys went to Barcelona, and we were kind of here, AC40 sailing. We started having trials. Had about 130 applications for women and youth, which was epic. And then
there must have been quite a process to go through 140 sailors and find, you know, four and five and six and six or whatever it was, four and four.
Yeah, I think they had to cut down to 30, and then from then on, it was we had that in-house trial.
Mm.
Unfortunately, we couldn't actually get. Some sailing time for the trial, so we did it all in the simulator, and then we got our final 10, and we had a really good squad in Barcelona, and that was an amazing experience being part of it. It was awesome.
Interesting talking with Hattie in a previous podcast about the technological aspect of it and the amount of time she spent in the sim and now, of course, the amount of time you're spending there as well. It's just part and parcel, especially this modern sailing world, not offshore, not sailing around the world, none of that.
Yeah, it's different, I guess. A lot of time in the sim, a lot of time staring at a computer screen, looking at what went wrong, who pushed the wrong button where, which is not something you can really do these days, but it's awesome. It's so different and so much to look on. So, yeah, it was a fantastic experience.
Look, the question everyone wants to hear the answer to is, what's it like sailing with the men you're with now? Just jump forward a bit here.
Yeah.
You're in...
You should probably get it. We're all over the shop. We're ready to know where we're going.
I was about to go back, actually. I wanted to hear about SailGP and the being in that.
Let's
we're going to jump forward first.
Let's just...
jump like forward rabbits. In time.
Yeah, that's what the people want to hear, mate. Right. Like, you've got the spot with the greatest crew of our time, and there you are. You're right in there at a young age, sailing with these amazing...
How old are you now?
26 tomorrow, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another youngie.
Yeah.
What's it like?
It's pretty awesome. They are just, yeah, like, there's a reason they're the best sailors in the world, and they kind of compose themselves to what they are, and it's just, it's fascinating how they operate, really. It's really inspiring. Yeah, and for even just being around them and kind of picking up mannerisms, which is really cool. Even in the 49er, we picked up on it. You know, if you are late to get out on the water, they will leave you behind, and that's the kind of mentality they had in the 49er, but you know that we're against them now. But being in the same team, it's really something else. It would be really cool, you know, just to experience it for everyone one day. They hold you to, you know, a very high standard, and you have to obviously meet the level, and yeah, it's
Joey, start cool. off. You're talking that's about cool. the Black Foils. People don't know what on earth he's talking about, and the fact that now you've climbed on board after a few campaigns up against them, but now you're climbing on board. Just how did that come about?
I think I did a. Well, we go jump back now to how it all.
Yeah,
began.
There we go. Yeah, we're going to go jump back.
I told you,
Joey, you did a OCS there. Right,
over the line, jump the gun. we'll go back to 2019 when SailGP first began. I was in a Olympic campaign for Japan, and I was racing kind of, I knew Nath Outeridge a little bit at this time, and he was racing NACRA, and we'd see him at the boat park, and I kind of heard from the grapevine that he was starting a Japan SailGP team, so he was kind of recruiting young, keen sailors. And yeah, at first wasn't quite sure how it would kind of fit in with the Olympic campaign, and I still don't know how I made it work, but so we got recruited for that, and I sailed as a grinder for a little bit just to kind of soak up the experience and all the knowledge. And at this point we had Ian Jensen and Luke Parkinson flying the boat, so yeah, really, really good sailors straight from Artemis. And I think those guys had a really big advantage compared to all the new teams that came into SailGP, just because of the sheer hours that they've spent on the F50 compared to all the other new guys on there. So
and the skiff background.
And the skiff background, and you know, Goobs and Nath have spent a lot of time sailing together. Yeah. So just like Pete and Blair, they've you know, they spent so long together. So that was a lot of knowledge that I picked up there about how the 50 works. And then we go for a little bit, Japan SailGP team. Unfortunately, we couldn't get enough sponsorship to continue on in 2022. That was always kind of the deal. You know, we had to kind of look for our own private investors and owners. As SailGP got bigger and bigger, and the price tag got heavier and heavier. So I think
That's a fine. That is a fine.
Instagram Reels during.
I know, Suellen can't help herself. So you were 2 years with the Japanese SailGP team.
Yeah, it was 2.5 years. Then COVID began, and that's when kind of it derailed, because there was a big break, and it was just a real shame, because I think there was a bit of a time cut on when we had to find sponsorship, and Japan was probably one of the last countries to open up the borders, and we couldn't get an event in Japan, which we were very close to getting across the line. But I think this is where just, I guess, the culture kind of meets the wall here with Russell wasn't able to go into Japan to meet with the companies, and they like to do face-to-face meetings, and it's all, you know, a lot of proper engagement over there. And so COVID kind of blocked that, and then we just ran out of time to find the money to keep our team going. So that was a bit of a shame, just for, I guess, Asia and Japan as a country as a whole, just to lose that SailGP team. Because
was there a swell of support behind
100%, you? Yeah. So I think there was a lot of junior and youth pathways created from all the foiling camps that the team ran. A lot of WASP, Hiroki Goto, who's a big foiling guy over there in Japan, ran a lot of WASP camps and actually got a lot of kids foiling over there, and they actually had something to kind of, we got a lot of inspire kids over in the team, you know, being interns and seeing what's possible. I guess Japan is like New Zealand in a sense, with it's a country that's surrounded by water, except there's just not those pathways available, you know, not those heaps of, there's no sailing clubs that are as much as New Zealand, so it's quite hard for little kids to get in there after school, and it's just a whole different kind of culture in that sense. So there was a little bit of an opening for Team Japan to kind of inspire kids, but yeah, it ended unfortunately. So
do you think it'll come back?
I think it would need, just with how much SailGP is growing and a lot, and how many other countries are paying a lot of money to get in, it's going to be quite hard. But I know Fuku's, you know, still working hard to make it happen.
But they need that universality.
I think it's
really important. You know, when you look at the Olympic movement, it is all about universality. And if you don't have someone from Asia, then you're missing out on a whole, you know, China, Asia.
Yeah, it's massive. Not quite global,
India,
is it?
So, no.
Be good to get some team from
future.
The nation. Yeah, I think so.
You
yeah.
see that growing, the way SailGP is going. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, but that's scary to have. How many boats do they have on the start line now?
12.
So that's 12. A lot, you know, in small spaces. Damn exciting.
It's great for us.
It's really great for fans and spectators, yeah. But friggin' scary all at the same
What's
time.
What's the biggest prang you've been on?
Bogan.
Yeah, a couple of big prangs.
You've had a few, right?
Couple, yeah.
Yeah.
Never actually capsized one, so that was good. Touch wood.
But didn't you have a good one in Sydney?
We had a good one in Sydney, yeah. It's when the British fully mounted us. Don't know if everyone remembers that one, but...
Yeah, I remember. it's a good word, mounting.
Mounted, yeah. It could happen. Yeah, we're on the start line in the British boat. There's a big blind spot with a wing... fairing is, and if you're the helm and the wing trimmer, you actually really can't see probably to leeward of you with a big blind spot on the wing. So they were falling down trying to, you know, get a gauge, and then just saw us quite late, and yeah, Ben steered up real aggressively, four got super high, leeway skid straight into us, and luckily they were kind of a bow forward of us.
They were high, eh?
Yeah, they were high, and so the foil kind of hit
the
top side, and they weren't actually able to fully mount us, but luckily the daggerboard
stopped it.
Daggerboard stopped it.
Yeah. Didn't guillotine anyone's heads.
Yeah.
How was the noise?
Pretty horrific, actually. Yeah, a lot of crunching. And then, yeah, we saw our bow disappear and then pop up about 10 metres to leeward. So then we might take on some water here. So then it was, yeah, full on, trying to get her back into... We're all the way in Cockatoo Island, so it was a 2 or 3 hour motor going 3 or 4 knots sideways. So
yeah,
it's a long way.
Wow.
But yeah, that was probably the worst one.
Like a game, they have a crash, yeah. And then you got the wing. It's not easy to get back to the dock. You know, people don't realise.
Is that one? The
you can't just pull the sail down.
No.
Yeah, it's not a sail.
The Aussies broke their wing and they had to. Motor 6 hours backwards down to Alcatraz. Oh, not Alcatraz. Wherever it was.
I know. Around the corner.
Yeah, around the corner in San Fran. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Could go bad, real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think with the new T foils, I think there'll be less skids going on.
So the first time we'll see them racing is here. Am I right?
Yeah.
So
the testing's all complete.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've
faster.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah, 3-4.
Any downside?
Not really. I think, once they've got the HSB, so they're the high-speed T-foils, we'll still be using the light air L-boards if it's light. So,
So how
could
much?
Can you explain the transition to this the new? Because you've already sailed one for the Black Foils, haven't you? So what's happening now? Just to people like me.
Yeah, they're bringing out new foils. Right now we've got the conventional L-shaped foils. So just the old design from 2017 America's Cup.
Okay.
And then now, you know, the whole foiling world's transitioning into T-foils, which are good for, you know, less speed, faster and less cavitation. So it'll be easier to sail and faster. So good for spectators.
Hey, I'm going to just jump right in here. Let's get onto the moths.
Are you going forward or backward?
We don't have a lot of time. Can we talk moths?
Yes,
sure,
moths.
Sure, we can, of course.
So how's that?
Yeah, how long have you been sailing it?
I think it's coming up to a month and a half now.
So he's a greedy.
In this particular moth, the V3, Mackay V3 moth, it's been a month and a half since I received it. And I also had a one prior 2 years ago, which I sailed for about 3 months in between the COVID.
Who are you training with?
Right now, we've got a really good squad.
Look at the smile.
We call ourselves the North Shore Pluggers. Yeah, find the trough really easily. We got a really good group. Some Seb Menzies, George Lee Rush, Sam Street, George Gautry, just all guys similar age, well, except for Seb, he's a baby. But really good group. We sail out of Tacker and then been going up to Manly these days. So I'm learning lots from them. They're you know, veterans in the class, and George and I are kind of, you know, trying to beat them here and there. Yeah. But yeah, those guys are really solid. So
yeah.
I think Seb will be a real dark horse at the Worlds, I think. Yeah. Which is cool.
Wow.
I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, it's really fun class. I mean, the cost is ridiculous, but I think it's such a cool boat. It's you know, by yourself. You can hike as hard as you can to get the boat go faster, or you can kind of sit back a little bit and enjoy it. And then the technical side is
so it's ridiculous.
It's cool.
How much wind do you need? Do they fall downrange well?
You need about 7 knots, I think. Or you can, you know, buy some big foils, but I think everyone's going smaller and smaller. So I think it all just comes down to your sails. And I think the sails are so streamlined now, it's all kind of turned into a bit of everyone's using a Mackay V3. So it's basically a one design
getting
class.
More one design.
And then you're kind of using different rigs.
Optimum body weight?
Good question. Probably 80 kilos, 85 is probably your best for all ranges, but I think it's condition dependent as well.
Could have anything that time of year.
So we've got the world coming down here to take on the Kiwi boys. It's, you know, it's a pretty, it's going to be televised, and Live Sell Die are going to be smashing it out up there, but...
Perfect.
Yeah, like, are we going to go well?
I mean, my goal is to try finish every race.
Yep.
Is a pretty solid goal for me.
Yep.
I think whether it's windy, I back myself to kind of have a good showing here and there. Yep. But I think, got to be honest here and there, and that the consistency isn't there compared to the guys that have started for a long time. So
sure.
I'm going to have an absolute blinder here and there off the start line and not hit a tack. So just got to be ready for those moments and just prepare myself.
Take it on the chin.
And then when it's light, I'm a little
honest
bit,
goals right there.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit heavier than most, so in the light I could struggle. So the plan is to, as long as I finish in the light, I'll be pretty happy.
Very different intensity from Sail GP, but still extremely intense because it's world champs and it's absolutely popular. So. There's a lot of people there. How do you adjust your mindset for something like that and your sailing skills? Is there much of a turnaround needed or very natural?
It's very... I think you have to be quite flexible to sail a moth. There's some really good guys that get under the boom quite well.
Not flexible mentally, but flexible.
Flexible physically. you get yourself in some really weird positions crossing the boat, so that's pretty important.
Do you find being taller is a little bit harder?
It is,
Yeah, okay.
But it comes with its positives as well, a bit of leverage. But
one thing the moth seems to produce is guys that heal really quickly, eh? Like you get good at... You know, there's going to be bumps in the road, and they seem to all come out of it with...
You know why I reckon? because it's fun to sail and you're just blasting. So whether you're at the front of the fleet or the back of the fleet.
But it's flying. Racing that's including calamities.
Yes.
You know, and they get good at dealing with calamities.
Real focus on
it's
this.
It's part of it. Well, it's part of it because they break things all the time.
Yeah.
Like the amount of times I've been down to Manly, someone's come in with a broken mast or, you know, because they're pushing them to the limits.
So hard.
So these things are, they break. A lot of boat work, yeah.
Do you like that?
Yeah, yeah. You're good at warming up to it. Oh, wouldn't say I'm the greatest, but definitely have to be good at it.
Is your old man involved, or is he not allowed to touch it?
No. We he doesn't.
He's been banned.
I wouldn't say he's banned, but I'd say just let me do it. So
my question with the Sail GP coming to Auckland, how many days training do the teams get here before you actually race? Because I know that the Worlds finish on the 9th, correct?
Yes, yeah.
And then you only have 10 days before, or 8 days, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, before the Sail GP.
So at the Black Foils, we get 4 days training before. So beforehand. We're Monday to Thursday training, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday racing.
So that's it. So you get very little time together as a team in the actual boat before the racing.
Yeah. No, Auckland's a different one, but every other regatta we're... For Sail GP, we're there arriving on a Wednesday night, Thursday training, Friday practice racing, Saturday, Sunday, and then we're Monday morning out of there. So,
wow,
it's not much training. So that's
so
why.
How do you gel as a team then with such little time in the boat together?
That's why it's taking notes is so important. The guys left together really, really solid notes for me to be able to integrate so well into my role, and then I guess. It's just really important to have a good solid culture to kind of have a good base anyway to for someone like to just jump in and be able to take it on. It's really hard as a Sail GP sailor because you're in and out and you don't get to do much sailing out of Sail GP. So that's why the Moth is a really great boat for me, just to keep foiling, keep my skills kind of sharp in terms of
and your decision making.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in the flight control role, I think
start practicing working on equipment too.
And the flight controller role, it's so focused. In the last race in Dubai, I didn't really know where I was on the course until Blair let out a little, Yahoo at the end of the at the end of the reach, because I was just so focused on flying the boat that, we're going upwind and downwind, but I think it's just you don't really get to see what's going on.
So you don't get your head out of the boat at all?
No.
Because remember, that was a philosophy, remember, get your head out of the boat? That was like one of the things I wrote on my sail, head up, to look around at the wind gusts and stuff. So
talk a little bit about, you're looking down, right?
Yeah,
you're looking down.
Basically looking at the screen and then the foil and then kind of the pitch of the boat, just kind of feeling it, basically. And then I get to kind of look around when I'm crossing the boat to see how we're doing or where we are on the course. Mm. But when I get back in the seat and take the rake off Pete, I'm straight back into it. And then, it's when it's windy, it's even more important to be the focus. But, you get mentally fried kind of on a race day.
How did it come about? Plainly, sailing with those two guys would be huge for you. When did they shoulder tap or talk to you about coming on board as a flight controller?
So in Barcelona, after the youth AC, I've been doing a bit of cycling in my part, just for fun. And Kim, the trainer, kind of said, you guys are putting out some pretty good numbers, so just keep training and we might need you for some warm-up sailing, and the cyclors are putting in a bit of work, and on those big testing days those guys get fatigued, and just getting closer and closer to racing, they didn't want any sicknesses. So Josh Armand and I got called in to do the warm-up. So he was on starboard and I was on port, I think, during the warm-up days, and then on the actual race days we would go out with the race boat and warm up for an hour, just when the guys are just smashing out pre-starts before racing, so we were just kind of expendable batteries for then. But even then,
that's
like
a good one, expendable batteries.
I guess we were just the guys that you can tire out and would swap in, and the race crew would jump on, do their 15 minutes, and then go to the America's Cup. So that was the kind of time I got to spend more time with Pete and Blair, and just an opportunity came about when Andy went to Brazil, and they needed someone, so it was just a really casual coffee chat, to be honest, and said, what's your plans next year, and it's just kind of
how was it when you rang your old man and told him
I think I had plans to kind of do some other stuff sailing next year, and I was doing the TP52s last year with Alpha Plus, which was really, really cool year of sailing this year, being involved with that and the whole different side of sailing. And I had plans to do that again, and I kind of just called and said, yeah, got a spanner in the works here. But I've already said yes. So, he was obviously stoked. And you left
the American Sail GP team because you were flight controller there too, weren't you? I left beforehand.
Yeah, right, it was only a 3 or 4 event contract.
Right.
But that was a really cool experience on its own, just because I got to really refine my skills, as because it was more of a teaching role. So, you know, when you kind of teach, you kind of learn more as yourself and your skills. So,
it's really good when you coach. I remember that too. Mm. When you have to actually coach, and then you have to explain to someone what you do and communicate it.
Exactly.
It takes, it's quite an art, and then it makes you think more about what you're doing and analyze.
Yeah, I'm quite more of like a feel type sailor, so sometimes it's quite hard for me to explain things. I just, like, this is how I do it, and then it's quite hard. So that was quite cool to be in that.
Become a better sailor.
Yeah, so kind of explaining what you're feeling is quite a hard thing to do when you've really never really put it into words. So,
Leo, you've got a 3-year contract, and you're going to be performing, for want of a better word, here in New Zealand, not too far away now. The pressure on you to perform well, is it something you're going to be comfortable with at home with those two, or all those legends on that boat? How does that stack up for you?
It's a bit nerve-wracking. It was nerve-wracking before Dubai, just with how all the information they got stacked up on me, and then perform a good event was cool, but I think these new T4s are going to make the racing closer. All the other teams, it's a blank slate now, so we're going to have to kind of really get creative with how we sail the boat, and it's going to be cool on its own because the T4s, they're like the America's Cup, they're similar foils, so I think there was a bit of knowledge to kind of dig out there with a great team that we have. And then, it's just as a flight controller, it's just about performing really, and it's going to be cool to do it at home. I think it's going to be cool to just be, in your own kind of culture, and all the people that are, all my friends and family are going to be there, and it's just be really cool to.
Do you reckon you could get Russell to lend us one for a rum race? That'd be kind of cool.
Good things come to those who ask, don't you, mate?
I always thought it'd be good to do like the Bay Week or
Coastal Classic.
Just imagine.
Even if you just stop and switch.
What's your top speed?
We've gone 50.3 or something, but in the T4s, they get 52s and 53s.
Wow.
So.
We're going to let Leo escape shortly. You guys got anything else that you want to blurt out before we go?
No, I'm done.
I'm exhausted. That was like, wow.
I'm done.
A lot of info.
Hey, bring it on. It's going to be exciting. Really cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Actually, last piece of advice, the young kids coming through, what would you say?
I think take the opportunities that are given to you. I think I said a lot of yeses when I was 15, 16. Fortunately, didn't do much of my time in school, but I think, just pick what you're good at, and if you really enjoy sailing, then you can really make a career out of it. And take the opportunities, and I think be wide in your variety of sailing as well. Don't get too tunnel vision into one boat. I think sail a variety of different boats. You learn so many different things, and I think that's from my career. I sailed a lot of different boats, and I think I got a lot out of it. So.
Really looking forward to seeing you and the crew perform. The Black Foils is going to be out off the coast. Before you know it, it's going to jump up on us really, really quick. And thanks so much, Leo
and good luck to the
for coming in.
Hope you finish every race.
Finish every race,
that's a winner goal.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the way it starts. That's it. Live, Sail, Die. I've presented to you Bird's Eye View. This is our podcast. It's up at the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron, up at the Crow's Nest. Andu, thanks so much for your continued support. I'm Darcy Watergrave. That is Joey Allen. That's Barbara Kendall. And Len Takahashi, brilliant to have you on board, mate. Nice. Thanks very much
for
your time. You go well.
Thank you.
It's Barbara Kendall. It's a bit like Andu can do. Yeah.